Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 142. This week my guest is Ray Boax, and you might know Ray from Twitter as the Hot Rod Farmer. He also has a podcast on the Global Ag Network with me and some other my counterparts called Idle Chatter, and he also has a website called Farm Machinery Digest. And I found Ray through the Global Ag Network, and because I listened to some of the stuff he has on there, and Ray has a unique kind of view here. He's got a pretty unique backstory, and it's something I'm looking forward to talking to him about. But Ray's podcast basically talks about the maintenance side and the machinery and how to keep things working good and running right. So Ray, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Casey. I'm honored to be on your show because I'm a fan of yours, and it's great to be able to put the two of us together, and I thank you for that opportunity. You're on the business side of machinery, and I'm on the nuts and bolts side. So, and we both are important, right?
That's very true, and Ray, it's my pleasure to have you on, man. So let's just jump into this. So if you notice, and you had a chance to listen to Ray, he's from out in New Jersey. He's a farmer out there, and shockingly enough, there are farmers in New Jersey. So, Ray, give me a little background on yourself and how you got to this point in your life.
Well, we have a small family farm in New Jersey that my family has had before I was born, and my surname is of Ukrainian descent. My parents were born in the United States, but my grandparents all came from Ukraine, and they immigrated into New York City to Ellis Island, and they did not like the city at all because they were from a farm area, an agrarian area, and they ended up finding this part of New Jersey, which is Warren County, which had a lot of Slovak people, and then in 1954, they bought what is now our family farm. So I've been a second-generation American-Ukrainian on a farm that was bought by my grandparents. And it's been quite an interesting journey on a small farm, and this area has changed so much dramatically. We're only 60 miles from New York City, so the suburbs have moved out, but we still have a lot of agriculture. And I've always loved farming. I've always loved machinery. I'm a car guy. I used to build drag race engines, and I'm also a technical writer in the automotive and agricultural industry. And I humbly say some people may know me from Successful Farming Magazine because I am the engine man there, and I'm also on their TV show. So as the Successful Farming Engine Man, and I just wanted to put it all together. I was frustrated because I felt that there needed to be a conduit to bring more information about the mechanical side of farm equipment to the farmers and ranchers, and so I figured I would try doing a podcast and a website. That's really it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and it's a great thing, and that's one thing I love about, you know, podcasts like yours, and what I'm trying to do here is we're trying to share information and kind of grow that knowledge and maybe break down some barriers and some walls between things that we can better have communication between, like on my end, from the retail, you know, business side of it to the end user side, or even from just dealership to dealership, those kind of things, spreading those ideas and what we see happening in the market. And you know, I think from like your days in the car business, and I want to hit on that a little bit, but your days, you know, being in the automotive side of the business, that's an ever changing, ever evolving animal, just like farm equipment. You know, it's one day you got machines that are driving themselves and all the electronics and stuff that go into them, and that's there. You just have so much going on that there's no way that you can possibly know everything, and especially on the mechanic side, the technical side of the business, you know, they always find those tricks of the trade out there. So when you from your automotive side of your life and your career, how do you see some parallels between the two, between what you see happening on the farm equipment side of the business and what you see happening on the automotive side of the business?
The parallels I see also have a big canyon between them.
Right.
Because I'm an engineer by trade, and I also, not only did I, like I said, had my own shop and built engines, but I also was a test driver and calibration engineer for BMW of North America. Their engineering facility is in New Jersey, and I did a good amount of testing on it. At the time, I had a freelance contract with them, and I did testing on what was then the new 3 Series and when the X5 Sports Utility came out. So I have a background within the automotive industry of doing engineering consulting. But what I saw and what really is a problem for the agricultural industry, both on the end user, the farmer side, and for you on the dealership, the business side of equipment, is that there was not a transition from truly mechanical engines and equipment to electronics. There was a big jump in agriculture. In the car industry, we had carburetors, using that for an example. We had carburetors, we had electronic carburetors, we had throttle body injection, then we had poor fuel injection, and then direct gasoline injection. There was this process that was linear. What happened in the agriculture industry, as you know, is they went from a simplistic mechanical engine to almost one leap to an electronically controlled engine. They went from a simple mechanical hydraulics to a whole bunch of integrated electronics into those systems. And the technician, the farmer, and the dealer did not have that transition. So there was a big cavern or a big valley, I should really say, not a cavern. And what really needs to happen is that we need to try to bring that up and bring those two together. And a person could have had an older John Deere tractor and they bought a 2018, and if they had a 15 or 20-year-old tractor, which is very common, it's a completely different. It's like going from a rotary phone to an iPhone.
Right.
That's really what I see. The problem is one of the impetuses for me to do this was not to make a person into an engineer. You know, we used to have a retailer, clothier, on the East Coast here because our farm is only 60 miles from New York City. And his advertising tagline was called, it was Sims, SYMS Men's Clothier. He was a haberdasher. And his advertising tagline was, the educated consumer is my best customer, because he felt if the consumer was educated, they would see the value in his product. I steal Mr. Sims' tagline, and I say the educated farmer, the knowledgeable farmer, is going to be the most profitable. And in the same terms, the educated technician in a service facility, an agriculture equipment service facility, is going to not only be the most profitable to his store, but serve the end user, the farmer, the best way that he possibly could. And so, in essence, that is what the problem is. The parallels are that everything that we have in agriculture now, we basically had 20 years other than autos there, 20 years in cars, 20 years ago in cars.
Right.
There's nothing new. People think that ag is so high tech, and it is high tech compared to what was before, but we've had anything that they have in agriculture as far as engine management is concerned, emission controls, electronics and motors. It was granted, it was used a different way, but we had that 20 years ago in cars. So that has made it easy for me to transition, but not easy for the average farmer or technician.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, you're exactly right. There has been a very rapid increase in technology, like you said, whether it's the auto track or whether it's the, just like you said, on the engine side of the business. There was a pretty big jump between, you know, what it was in, you know, an 8300 John Deere tractor to a 2018 8370R. You know, there's a huge gap between those two, and it's a pretty slim amount of time that happened. And I think it caught a lot of folks kind of off guard now that were doing a lot of their work, their own work, trying to do as much as they can on their own to where we're at now, and we're starting to see this need for our technicians, and the ramp up that we're seeing there is it's a pretty big hurdle to overcome. Even even from the, on the automotive side, you know, technicians are always in need, but on the farm equipment side of the business and diesel engine technology and those kind of things, there is a there's a big kind of, like you said, or a big cavern there between getting those that knowledge and that ramp up in our technicians.
Yeah, and you know, for instance, I had a gentleman contact me a while back through my website, and because I love to be able to dialogue and help people as any way I possibly can. I mean, often it's from 3,000 miles away because I'm in New Jersey, but you know, we call it industry trying to phone fix something.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a person who bought, I think he bought it up in Canada. He bought a planter. It was a John Deere planter, and I think he had a case tractor. I honestly don't remember. It was two different colors. The planter and the tractor were two different colors. And he tried to interface the electronics in it, and he could not interface. I don't remember per se what the exact issue was, but he couldn't interface the electronics. And then he went crazy with this. He bought, trying to get it to work. And what basically had happened, it was a used planter. It was only maybe one planting season. But in essence, because he was not familiar with how to use a voltmeter and do a voltage drop test on the ground, he spent a lot of money and a lot of time, and then the end result was the only reason why it did not want to interface is that it had a pinched ground wire.
Oh, yeah.
And it cost this gentleman, you know, a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of aggravation. And he happened to find the pinched wire by chance, not through a diagnostic procedure, but he happened to be running his hand across a wire or putting his hand up for some reason, and he found his Jesus had like a dent in his wire. And that was what the whole problem was. And you know, I use that as an example because the basics the farmer needs to learn the basics. He needs to understand a voltage drop test. He needs to understand how to use a voltmeter. He needs to be able to understand some basic electronics, because if we're introducing all these electronics into these systems, you know, what frustrates to me to no end is everybody talks about high tech. Well, if the tractor doesn't run, you know what I'm saying, or the transmission doesn't go in gear, all the high tech means absolutely nothing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we're basically, you know, the industry talks about high tech drones, and you know, that's all fine, and high tech this, and we're going to have this, and we're going to have satellite interface. That all comes to a screeching halt if the tractor doesn't spot.
Right.
You know, or something so simplistic today, or so simplistic like a bad diode in an alternator that's feeding non-rectified AC into a computer system, that'll drive your monitors or drive your engine control, it'll drive everything crazy. And the thing is that we're trying to forget about the basics, and the foundation of it needs to be established, you know?
Yep. So I was listening to the last podcast years I was listening to, and it's been a while back. I haven't had a chance to really listen to too many podcasts here of late. But the one I was listening to last time, and you made a comment, and you were talking about servicing your air conditioning unit. And,
yes.
And it was the point of your comment. The point of the podcast was, this is something that you said, I think your exact words, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but something to the effect of, no one really worries about the air conditioner until it doesn't work, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the last thing anybody thinks about, and that's a great point, because I'm the same way. I mean, never really thought about servicing, quote-unquote, my air conditioner. And the point that you made in there that I thought was a good one, and I want you to kind of expand on this a little bit, was what you're doing in your podcast isn't going to make anybody any money, but it's going to save them money in the long term, because you're basically not going to have a critical failure at a very bad point in time. Like, you know, your combine's not going to fail in the middle of harvest when you've got black storm clouds coming at you from the west here, you know. So talk about that a little bit, and talk about how your focus on your podcast and what that focus is for your listeners.
You know, that's exactly you. I have to commend you, because you picked up what I'm trying to convey. Nothing that I say on my show or on my website will make you a nickel. It's going to save you money. And what I like to say, it's not what you make, what your farm makes, it's what you keep is what counts. You could have great crop prices, great yield, great to blow up every motor on the farm, then you're going to have brackets on the bottom of your balance sheet.
Right.
So the thing basically is that, and the point that I want to emphasize is that I look at farm equipment as I do emergency equipment, rescue equipment. It needs to run when it needs to run. And something, for instance, like doing a fluid analysis, which is a predictor of a potential problem, is so important so that you could find that problem before you get into the field. But I also take a blanket approach and look at every piece of equipment on the farm. Every piece of equipment on the farm is important. And for instance, let's say like the air conditioner, and bring that up, is that if you have today's farm equipment, you need to have air conditioning because it's like an office building. The windows don't open. It's not an open platform. You can't get any air in there. So the thing is that if you neglect something like the air conditioner and it has a catastrophic failure and it costs you $3,000-$5,000 to fix it, you're spending $3,000-$5,000. How much crop is that? How many bushels of corn? How many bushels of wheat? How many whatever you produce, you have to look at it that way. And once you look at it that way, you will see that it is very easily erode your profit margin very quickly. I'd rather have you put that money into a crop fertility and spend a couple of $100 in a dealership getting that air conditioner service, for example, or doing a fluid analysis and finding that the hydraulic pump on the planter is starting to go away, and it's still going to cost you $4,000 for the pump, but it's not going to break when you're trying to chase that optimum planting window to get that crop in the ground. So basically, in essence, it's always cheaper to maintain things and then to fix them or replace them, and specifically in a business like agriculture that is so time sensitive for that machine to work.
Yep. I'm right there with you, man. You brought something up that is near and dear to my heart, and that's fluid samples. I think a lot of that comes from my first job in this industry was working for a cat dealership, and that was one thing that they did a lot of, and I think it was pretty heavily adopted on the construction side of the business was, routine fluid samples. Every time something came in, you get the oil changed every 250 hours or 500 hours or whatever it was, there was a lifelong representation of those fluid samples throughout. If they had 10,000 hours on it, there was every whatever interval those oils were going to be changed at, you had a snapshot in time what that looked at, and then you could go back and compare what that looked like all the way through. And the power that's in a fluid sample is above and beyond anything else that you can think of when you're looking at predictive failures, and I think that is something that has not been adopted very well on the ag side of the business.
No, and I agree, and it frustrates me because the thing is that, I agree with you 100%, and you being on the equipment side, so let's say I have a tractor and I've had fluid testing results since brand new, and now I want to trade this piece of equipment in, right? Then you're going to see that you're going to be able to confidence take that onto your pre-owned lot, and then with confidence you're going to be able to sell that to the next farmer. And then also with confidence that farmer is going to be able to buy that equipment from you and say, I have a whole history of fluid analysis being a predictor of what is going on in this piece of equipment, be it hydraulic fluid, coolant, or engine oil. And the part that, I watch these auctions on TV, and these people are going to spend six figures on a piece of equipment, and they don't know whether the engine has cylinder lining cavitation. If they do a $25 fluid sample, right, they'd be able to see whether there's any elemental metals in there, and they'd say, geez, cavitation erosion is starting. It doesn't have a hole in the lining yet, but this is a piece of equipment that I either don't want to buy or is going to give me problems down the road. But the thing is that I'm with you 1,000%, and it's so inexpensive to do fluid testing. And to me, a farmer that does not do fluid testing, and my East Coast roughness will come out, is that it's akin to a guy who just puts N, P, and K down on the soil, never does soil testing, and he wonders why he never has record yields. Yeah. He scratches his head, and he blames the weather, he blames the seed, he blames the soil, he blames everything else. I mean, fluid testing is the key to predicting a potential failure or problem when it is not really there yet. It's like going to the doctor and getting a checkup.
Yep. And that's especially true. We get a lot of those machines that come through that have, you know, 8,000 hours, 10,000 hours, 12,000 hours, those kind of things. Some of these older machines that are coming through the line right now. And, you know, the first thing someone asks you all the time is, you know, has there been a new engine or a new transmission or is anything getting overhauled or underhauled or anything like that? And a lot of times, no, it hasn't. And so it's hard. If you had the fluid samples to present, you could say, well, you know, here's the last 5,000 hours worth of fluid samples, kind of give you an idea of what's that. And you can start seeing what's, is the engine strong? Is the transmission got some issues with it? To your point on the hydraulic pump, the hydraulic pump goes out and it shells out and sends, you know, metal shavings throughout the entire hydraulic system. That's expensive to fix. You know, that's you're going through a lot of headaches to get that done. So, you know, there's just so many things you can do to kind of prevent or at least predict what's coming down the line.
Oh, exactly. And it's so, I mean, a fluid test is $25 or $30 you spend.
Right.
And most labs, if you're going to do a lot of tests, they'll give you the evacuation pump. So you could do an in-service test on anything. And, you know, even if on a used piece of equipment, you're going to an auction, get there, you know, you're spending $200,000, go there a week early and examine the piece of equipment, make a sample, send it out, spend $100, sample 3 or 4 different foods, send it to the lab, they'll get it back to your ASAP, and you'll know with confidence whether you want to bid on that piece of equipment.
Yep.
I'm going to give a plug for one of my shows, and I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it, but I did, I believe I called it Something Old to You is Something New to Me, and basically that whole show is based upon how you should prepare a new piece of equipment, brand new equipment when it comes to the farm, for potential resale, and what you should do to make that piece of equipment something that someone else would want to buy.
Yeah.
And I think that it would be a good listen for your customers and for the general farm audience, because, you know, there's nothing wrong with pre-owned equipment, and it's great to have new equipment, but we need to set the stage. We have to think of that piece of equipment leaving the farm the day we bring it home, and if we want to get the most return on investment from our dollars, and I want it to come to your dealership, and I want you to be able to sell that machine with confidence to somebody else, and I want everybody to be profitable.
Yeah.
And these little things like brushing your teeth, right? Then you go to the dentist. What do they tell you? Brush your teeth. It's not complicated. But for some reason, the agricultural community likes to poo-poo that and say, it doesn't mean anything. We don't need to do that. And they just go on their own way, and then they cry. I'm their biggest critic. I love them because they're my people, but I'm the biggest critic, and I have no patience for people who don't want to put the effort in to make their operation truly, truly profitable and just point fingers. And machinery will bury you if it's not taken care of.
Yep, and that's, you know, your brush your teeth analogy is a good one, because, you know, there's a link between, you know, brushing your teeth and having good oral health and how it relates to your heart. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's kind of the same thing. You know, you have an issue come up, little issue over here could lead to a giant, you know, you could, a little issue over here you could fix. It's not too big of a deal. If you just fix that, you save your engine 1,500 hours down the road.
Oh, exactly. And like you said, and it's great that you brought that up, because, you know, that there is a synergy in equipment. There is a synergy as things interact. And there is also a synergy specifically. There's a great amount of synergy with the modern electronics today. So the thing is that you could have a weak battery in a piece of equipment. And because that weak battery with sulfated cells, you know, you can't predict, you know, I'm jumping away from fluid, but electronics, but it's the same thing. You know, just like you can, maybe out in Scott's Bluff, you have a pretty good idea where the lightning is going to strike, because there's a cell phone tower there, or there's a big high, you know, there's a tree up on top of the mountain. But you really can't predict how electricity is going to react to a certain condition. And something like a sulfated battery, that this piece of equipment needs nothing more than a battery, could drive all the in-cab electronics and the engine controller crazy, simply because the alternator output is being skewed. So the thing is that it's, you know, getting back to the brushing your teeth and what you were saying about affecting your heart, that Today, the equipment is like a plate of spaghetti where everything is touching one another. And you say, well, how the heck is the, you know, how the heck is the battery going to affect, you know, affect my planter? Well, if you run an electric cable to there, or how is the alternator going to affect this? Or how is, you know, how is the degradation of the fluid in my hydraulic system going to affect the output of my PTO or the, or one of the hydraulic lines that are going someplace else? It all is basically integrated today, and we need to just, and it's simplistic. It's simplistic yet complicated. You take care of it properly, you have a basic understanding, and this equipment will serve you for a long time. But I'll say one thing, from my estimation, with the complexity of today's machines, they will last a long time and serve you very well if you take care of them properly. But if you don't, they have no tolerance for poor maintenance, or yeah, very little tolerance yeah for poor maintenance. The old stuff is like a hammer and an anvil. You have to really kill it to break it, and you have to be a real gorilla to break it. But this stuff today, I mean, you don't, these guys, they want to fight me to put lubricity in the diesel fuel.
Yeah. Right.
And then they claim, then they cry why they got $6,000 worth of injector repairs in their pickup truck.
Yep.
So. I'm hard on them because I want them to be profitable. I'm hard on them because I call it's tough love. And I don't tell people what they want to hear on my show. I tell them what they need to do to be profitable as far as the machinery side, my end of the mechanical side of the machinery. And I want them to put, I want them to have the ledger column where it says repairs, minimal maintenance at the proper level, and then I want them to put that, I want to put those profits into fertility, into animal husbandry, into everything else, and I want them to be able to come and buy a new piece of equipment and be able to take care of that and have it profitable on the farm and be able to sell it and pass it on to someone else as a good piece of equipment. And it's really, there's basics, and one of the basics is that additize your fuel. If you don't additize your fuel, you're off to the races as far as wear in the fuel system, the engine, the tier 4 system, everything. So it's a simplistic approach. I don't try to make people into engineers. I don't want them to be an engineer. I want them to know what they need to do. Like going to the doctor, brush your teeth, exercise, watch your cholesterol, and you're okay, buddy. You don't need to go get a medical degree for that.
That's right. All right. So tell me, well, if I go up to your website right now, and that's farmmachinerydigest.com, correct?
Correct.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. And there's a bunch of technical articles there. The podcasts are also there. Mm-hmm. And because I come from a magazine background, it's laid out like a magazine. There's an editorial column monthly. But I really would like to, you know, what I really like to share with your audience is that I have something I call a toolbox test. And I do those once a month. There's about 10 or 11 of them up there now. And they're a test that you take, and it's multiple choice, and you just click on it and submit the answers, and then you get the right answer back, but it's the right answer with an explanation. It's just not the answer is B. The correct answer is B. I explained to you why. So it's, I meant it to be a true learning tool for the farmer. And each one is patterned with a little story. I don't just say, okay, you know, the alternator is not charging, what you should do. I put a real-life story into it, and I really think that your audience would enjoy it and learn a lot from it. I'm about education, and it's very hard to be profitable in any business without having a certain level of knowledge, and I think I hope that the toolbox test is something that your audience will enjoy.
So tell me a little bit about the toolbox test. So what would be, like, give me an example of what a question would be like.
A question would be like, I'm trying to think. So, for instance, okay, let's say, and the way I have them worded, it'll say, for instance, all right, you're in the field, and the temperature, I'm making this up as I go along because I don't remember what I wrote, but all of a sudden you're mowing hay, and the temperature on the tractor starts to spike. It just goes and spikes immediately, all right? Mm-hmm. You shut the engine off, and you see it didn't blow a hose. It didn't blow a hose. It didn't throw a belt. And so it's the end of the day, so you shut the tractor down, and you worry about it tomorrow, and you have your wife come pick you up. And you, so you talk to, the next morning at coffee, you talk to two or three of your friends, and you ask them their opinion. So it says, Farmer A says, well, you shouldn't have bought that track. You should have bought another color because they always overheat. Farmer B says, since the temperature spiked so quickly, I think that the spring broke in the thermostat, or the wax pellet broke in the thermostat. Farmer C says that I think that the water pump is going, and Farmer D says that the belt may be slipping. So it's laid out that way, whereas it's like a casual discussion, and you always, and the way I lay it out is that the farmer has a problem, and then he asks four of his farmer friends of what they think the cause is, and then you choose. You choose one of the farmer friends. It's a 5-question test, and then you submit your answers, and then I give you an automatic. I don't know who took the test. I don't know your name. I don't know anything. And then you get the proper answers back, and I say, no, Farmer B is correct because the engine spiked in temperature so quickly that the wax pellet from the thermostat that opens up against the spring probably ruptured and leaked, and it closed the thermostat down. So it's an education tool that way. It's I mean, not because they're mine, they're a lot of fun. When I was a kid, I used to read Popular Mechanics, Mechanics Illustrated, yeah. Popular Science, and there was, and they had quizzes like that in them years ago. So that's how I got the idea of doing this with farm equipment. It was a little story, and then you're always asking, the answers are always four different farmers' opinions. So I think that, and it takes about 5 minutes to take it, and it is a learning tool.
Yeah, I just pulled it up here. I'm taking a look at it. I'm gonna do these every month, man. This is awesome. I'm going to check this out. This will make me not sound so stupid when I go back and talk to the guys in the shop. So this will be nice.
Yeah. So like I said, it's all learning, and the it's all learning. And then another part of the website that I'm proud of, and even though it's nothing that I created, is there's a video tab. Uh-huh. And on the video tab, I those are excellent videos that I have found. They're not educational as far as anything, as far as equipment is concerned. They're inspirational.
Gotcha.
And two of my favorites on that video tab are Into the Heart from Ford Motor Company. It has nothing to do with cars. It's inspiring how something inspired a young boy in his life. And it's exquisitely done. And then the other one that's really that tugs at my heartstrings is called Empathy, and it's from the Cleveland Clinic. And I really think that you know, when you have a bad day or things are going wrong and a field is flooded out or what have you, is that if you watch that Empathy video, it has no voice in it whatsoever. It's music and just captions, and it really grounds you and gets you to realize how blessed you are, that you only have a problem that, you know, your planter broke, and you don't have the problems of the people in a hospital. And I use that video section. There's some great videos from Bex in there, mm-hmm. and there's a couple other videos in there, but there's nothing educational about equipment. The goal of the Farm Machinery Digest is not only to help educate people, but I want to try to inspire them. And those two, Into the Heart and Empathy, are really favorites of mine. And I watch them often just when I'm feeling sorry for myself, as we all do sometimes.
Right, you know? Yep, I hear you. All right. Well, Ray, if you, what's the one piece of advice you'd give to? We have a lot of young technicians coming in right now, and we're all you know, scavenging around trying to find the folks we need to. We've got some good young kids coming into the business on the technical side of the business. If you had one piece of advice that you'd give to any of these 18, 19-year-old kids coming into this, what piece of advice would you give them?
The piece of advice that I would give is that they need to have a passion for what they're doing, and they need to look backwards and build, and they need to be a tinkerer. You need to be able to ask questions, you need to have passion, and you need to not start at letter Z in the alphabet. You need to be able to start and learn your basics, understand to the level that you need to how a engine works, how a transmission works, how a hydraulic system works, and then build upon that, have an inquisitive mind, and just and tinker, play with stuff. You cannot be a good technician if you're not a tinkerer. I'm sorry, you have to go home, you have to be the type of kid that wants to go and be just as interested in a printing press as a sprayer or a combine, because the mechanical aspects of that are all overlap. And the thing is that you really need to just read, talk to people, tinker, and take every class that dealership has or that school has available to you, because education is never lost. And the thing is that just like being an excellent farmer or an excellent producer, it's a culmination of all different things, and you need to bring that all together. But have a passion about it. Have a passion about it. Read, listen, learn, ask questions, and don't think that it works on magic, because it doesn't. I had a wonderful teacher in General Motors School, and his name was Dick Hip. I did an editorial on my Flags Across the Harvest, and he used to say, "It just doesn't work on FM," and you could imagine what, I won't say what the F was, magic. So it doesn't work on FM. Right. A man designed it, a man can fix it, a man can understand it, but right. You need to have that foundation. You need to have that foundation, and so many times today, people don't want to, they want to skip the foundation. You know, the scriptures tell us a house that's built on sand is going to fall. You can't, the foundation is the strength of the building, not the roof, and we need to have that foundation, and that's something. But if they're not, sadly, if they're not passionate about machinery or mechanical things, then I'm not saying they can't be a good technician, but they won't have that foundation. But just look, explore, ask questions. Don't be the young person sitting in the classroom. I taught for many years. I taught people in the trade. And I used to say right to them, I'm tough. I'm tough lover, like a Marine drill sergeant. I'll give you a hard time for my class. I'll say, if you ask no questions here, then you either know everything and I'll sit down and you could teach me, or you're so lost that you don't even know where to begin. And I'd rather have you lost, because then I could take you along. Mm-hmm. But listen, learn, engage people, engage education, and you're going to find that you're not going to get everything you need to know in one place. I'm sorry. You can take a little bit from here, a little bit from there, a little bit from there, and put it together.
Yep. No, that's good advice, man. Well, Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, man. I really appreciate you being on.
Well, thank you so much, and it's an honor to be on your show, because you do a great job. You do a wonderful service to the industry, and I want to thank you. That you had this crazy accent, dryland farmer from Hackettstown, New Jersey, where they make M&M candies. So if you ever look on the back of M&M candies, it says Hackettstown, New Jersey. Mm. It says Mars Wrigley, and they're 2 miles from our farm.
Is that right? No, that's cool. That's cool.
That's my claim to fame.
There you go. All right, Ray. Well, if folks wanted to reach out to you and ask you questions, what's the best way for them to do that?
hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. It's a long email address. I'm sorry about that. It's hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And I would, it's great being on the Global Ag Network with you. If you have the opportunity to your audience, listen to a podcast, go to the website. I love engaging. No question. I'm a straight shooter. If I don't know the answer, I will tell you. But I love engaging and educating people. And no matter what age you are, if you're young or old, you never. It's always the right time. It's always the right time to learn. And I just want to have an open invitation to your audience to be able to engage me in any way they can.
Well, Ray, take care of yourself, and hope we can do this again sometime, and we'll catch you down the road, bud.
Thank you so much. You have a blessed day. Thank you so much. I'm honored. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at movingironpodcast@movingironpodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit movingironllc.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and globalagnetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out. Moving Iron.
in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years you'll find a seed.